Good morning, people, human beings. It is August the 22nd, 2019. Yeah, so anyways, I am up. It is barely 3 a.m., and I'm up. And you say, Dan, why are you up? Because it's actually work-related. And this podcast could mainly be about that. It could mainly be about Willie's. If you're wondering, do I worry about this? Like, will somebody connect the dots? Because every once in a while I fuck up and I mention the true name of Willy Wonka's, where I work. But really, I don't fucking care. I'm going to start out this podcast by quoting something, someone, I don't remember who. In fact, I think I should look up the quote right now. Nah, I'm not going to worry about it. Anyways, like 20 years ago when I got out of the Army, I got a process improvement quality engineering job for a company in Indianapolis, and we were doing process improvement training. And one of the quotes that came up in one of the books was, "You cannot continuously improve the candle to the light bulb." And what that means is no amount of incremental quality improvements turns a candle into a light bulb. What's required is a paradigm shift. What is required is a breakthrough. Now, I mention this because the current philosophy that has infected most of software development around the country, like a pod people type methodology, is generally called agile, sometimes called scrum, sometimes it's DevOps. But whatever it is, I will tell you explicitly, it's about making incremental improvements. Now, of course, people will say, well, we're making things better, and in terms of Pareto sub-optimization, from your perspective, that might be fucking true. But from the perspective of the system as a whole, you're actually making things worse. Why am I up at 3 a.m.? One of the reasons is because people at Willy Wonka's believe that you can take a piece of shit code base and continuously improve it into a fucking light bulb. Or rather, shit that works. When in fact, what you have to do is probably throw it all away. Because it's that bad. Yeah, so anyways, that's why I'm up at 3 a.m. Here's another reason why I'm up at 3 a.m., just to keep things real. Software engineering today is not about computer science. And maybe it never was, although I think it was. When I first got into this 20 years ago, plus or minus, more like, actually not 20 years ago, technically more like 17 years ago. But when I first got into this, for the most part, it was about the engineering. And where there was bullshit, people identified it and called it out. Now I can truly say that most of programming and software development is about intersectional, non-engineering social justice issues. Okay? People are being made architects. People are put in charge of products. People are in charge of code at Willy Wonka's, not because they're qualified, but because they fit into some specific demographic. Are you beginning to get what I'm fucking saying here? They hire the old white guy to fix the broken code. They hire the young, intersectional, degenderfied human with purple hair to write the shitty code. It's irrelevant that the old white dude could write the code correctly in the first place, and therefore you'd never need the software janitor. But that's fucking irrelevant, because that's not how things work now. If you go to Willy's, shit does not get fixed correctly. And the reason why it doesn't get fixed correctly is people are more worried about massaging each other's egos. People are more worried about living in a self-referencing delusion than actually writing correct code. I am up at 3 a.m. because I had a discussion with a permanent employee at Willy's yesterday. And this is important to note. there are two classes of employees at Willy Wonka's. There are the Smurfs and the Oompa Loompas, or the Blue Badges and the Orange Badges. I'm an Orange Badge. I'm an Oompa Loompa, which means I'm disposable. Most of the workers at Willy's since 2009 have been Oompa Loompas. I wonder why that is. Probably, to keep things fucking real for those of you that live in Disneyland, probably because it's really easy to, you know, to get rid of contractors, and it doesn't look like layoffs. So you actually improve your cost position, if you need to, without signaling to the markets that you got problems. So yeah, most of the workers at Willy's are contractors, and therefore quite disposable. So I, as a disposable worker, was talking to one of my bosses. I say one of my bosses because that's another thing about the intersectional, de-genderfied, purple-haired place of Willy Wonka's. You might find yourself with many bosses. It really is a Schrodinger management problem. Until you observe the relationship of the dotted line, you're not really sure it's fucking there. Yeah, so I was having a conversation with a Smurf yesterday. And I said, "Mr. Smurf, so I don't have to be up at 3 a.m., so none of us have to be up at 3 a.m., why can't we just expand the hard drive space? Because essentially, we were running into a black box problem. And when I say black box problem, I mean we had a chunk of code that we're responsible for, but we don't actually get to look at the source code. We just get to work with the compiled bits. Wow, that's always fun, to be responsible for something you cannot fix. But yeah, we had a black box problem. It looked like a resource issue. And I said, listen, it's a no fucking brainer. It's the fucking cloud. If the cloud that Willy Wonka's creates is everything it says it is. And keep in mind, Willy Wonka's cloud product is one of the most popular, quote-unquote, in the U.S. today. And what this guy, this insider at Willy Wonka's basically told me, is that the cloud doesn't fucking work. It's unstable. Doing something small, like expanding the size of the C drive on a virtual machine, could potentially just not only crash that VM, but here's what gets really fun, totally fuck it up so bad that you can't recover it. Now, you need to understand this, folks. You have to really trash a real physical server in order to not recover data off the hard drive. I mean, you usually have to run it over with a truck. But what this guy told me is basically the virtual machine within the wondrous cloud that we're using is unstable. Now, for those of you who don't know computer science or software engineering or general security theory, here's something you need to know. I'm going to drink a little coffee first. If you put an operating system into an unstable state, it is much easier to hack, to break into. I'm going to repeat that statement. If I put a system, any system, into an unstable state, the ease with which I can hack it increases. I don't want to go into all the reasons why. I don't want to talk about memory registers and what happens to a kernel, which is the core OS, when it becomes unstable. But the bottom line is this. If you can put an operating system or a virtual machine or a whole fucking cloud into an unstable state, you can hack the fuck out of it. So yeah, I basically was told yesterday what I already know, because I know this from working with the Amalga product back in 2010, that this company that pays me is a crooked, crony fucking company. It produces most of the operating system software that people use today, or at least seemingly so, right? Definitely as far as businesses go. And the shit they produce is not fucking safe. It is not secure. You're getting hacked six ways to Sunday. Guess what? Willy Wonka's is getting hacked all the fucking time. I was told on the first, I think the first or the second day, that the core domain at Willy's is no longer secure. Everybody knows it. And so yeah, folks, if you're asking me why sometimes you hear me complain about my professional life, this is what I would like to explain. I actually used to, and probably on some fucking level, still care about my professional life. I used to care about the engineering. I used to think the logic and the computer science was important. Get the math right. Folks, nobody gives a fuck about that shit anymore. You're worried? Let me tell you something. I'll see some of these stupid-ass alt-right folks do these videos about the robot apocalypse, about the rise of the machines. It's really sad. They're regurgitating the intersectional, degenderfied H-1B visa propaganda bullshit. Folks, open up your fucking ears. The people who are writing that code at Harvard and MIT, at places like Google and Willy Wonka's and Apple, these people are being socially promoted. These people are a lot of fucking morons with huge egos. And you're worried about the robot apocalypse. Yes, it's true. You'll create a machine that can beat me at chess. Yes, it's true. Maybe poker. You might create a machine that will take a tiny slice of my cognitive menu and you might reproduce it. But the machine that can actually reach a state of consciousness and take control of the world, that actually would require competent engineers to build. Folks, those people are not being chosen to do the work. Do you fucking understand what I'm saying? So please do not be afraid of the robot apocalypse. I think it's propaganda. I think the reason why they want you to be scared of it is because they want you to believe that this whole post-scarcity, fully automated society is right around the fucking corner. But those of us who live in Little Saigon and see the fucking cum and blood and dried feces on the street every day, we know that world ain't nowhere fucking near. We see the tent cities. We see the scrumbly folk. I don't see any robots doing any magical shit, but I see a lot of broken shit, and I live in the high-tech city of Seattle. What the fuck is wrong with people? If you are afraid of the robot apocalypse, you have never worked one fucking day in a software shop, a major software shop. You haven't. You have not seen the people doing this work. You have not been in those fucking meetings. If you understood how unimportant logic and reason and actually good mathematics was to most of these stupid fuckers, you wouldn't spend one day worrying. What you would be worrying about is other stuff. You'd be worrying about this complex society, which includes about 100 boiling water nuclear reactors nationwide, that really depends upon all this electronic and, yes, programming shit working correctly. All of it. The stuff that makes sure that there's a backup generator delivered, yeah, that's fucking software being written by some fucktard in Mumbai. Oh, the backup generator didn't show up. Well, shit, we'll only be out of electricity for a few hours, we'll be okay. And then 24 hours later, one boiling water reactor cooks off. And then another. If you want to tell me that bad programming practices won't hurt you, I promise you, you're a fucking idiot. Anyways, I don't know, but I think I should switch topics here because I got myself a little upset. Like I said, I don't really enjoy being up at 3:30 in the morning, and I really don't enjoy being up because basically I work for a crooked crony company that sells a product where they say one thing to the outside world, but internally they know that it's all bullshit. So let's switch topics. What do you say, folks? Let's get the glimbus gloop out of my system. Yeah. Next fucking topic for Willies. I have a lot of old topics. I feel like cleaning up. So I guess this might be a little bit of spring cleaning. I don't know. So we're getting into another election season, and I have this topic about non-participation being the greatest, the most powerful vote you have. And let me explain what I mean by that. Every 2 years, because it is every 2 years now. It's not every 4 years, because it's the whole, if we take over the House and the Senate, we can defeat the bad guy in the White House. And the thing is, I don't care if it's Democrats or Republicans. That's the same old stupid fucking refrain. So every 2 years, we're told that if you don't vote, you're a bad person. If you don't vote, you're like the Grimbley folk that hang out on Fifth Avenue. You hang out there waiting for your next hit of Gombas. If you don't vote, you're probably one of those people that sets kittens on fire. Just like the Bumpkus people of Bellevue. Yeah, if you don't vote, you're some kind of a scumbag. But actually, if you're a voter, and if you're a happy taxpayer, we don't have a choice, really, about taxes. They fuck you in so many ways there, including the ultimate tax, which is printing money. And I don't like to have to explain these things. So if you don't know what I mean by printing money, please just Google it. But yeah, we really have a hard time avoiding the taxes. Even if you're in the black market, eventually you'll pay a sales tax. So fuck you. But we do still have a choice about voting. And if you're a voter and you choose to vote because you feel like it makes you a patriot, then yeah, you have a special connection to all those dead men, women, and children that we blow up, that we set on fire in the Persian Gulf in the Middle East. You have a special existential and moral connection, because whether your guy wins or not, every time you vote, the crocodile smiles. Every time you vote, the crocodile, which when I say crocodile, you know I mean government. Every time you vote, the crocodile smiles, because you're affirming it. You're basically telling it that, yeah, I don't know, but you're a legitimate man. You're a great crocodile. If you have to go around the world eating babies, fuck, that's democracy. The greatest vote you have as a human being in any situation, and I don't care what it is non-participation. Period. And frankly, even in a tyranny, you still have that choice morally. Sure, the choice has outcomes and consequences. Guess what? Every choice does. It always has. We are in a tyranny. So at this point in American history, choosing non-participation can impact you. It can impact you economically. Let me just give you an example. Let's say at Willy Wonka's, I go into work someday, and they decide to have some big session where we talk about, you know, LGBTQ issues and how many genders there are and shit like that. So, you know, folks, I have to go to Willy's every day, and I see all kinds of weird-ass propaganda about ethnicities, about genders, about how, you know, if I don't see enough African-American men on my programming team, that means we're racist. Yeah, please see the first topic about that one. Basically, there could come a day in the future where all the Oompa Loompas and all the Smurfs, all the contractors and permanent employees are brought into a room, and we have one of these training sessions about the genders and about pronouns and about company policy. And I'm telling you, this day is coming. I don't think it's that far away. And if that day comes, that's the day that I don't fucking go to work. In fact, that's the day I leave my shit at work. If you want to know if I have lines in the sand, I do. I'm a Christian. I will go to work and I will do my job. But what I won't do is I won't approve of bullshit. I won't approve of evil. I won't approve of people telling me stuff that's lies or forcing me to participate in lies. The greatest vote you have is non-participation. If every American that was against the war, which I would hope, and when I say the war, I mean the wars plural. If every American was against all the fucking military action worldwide, and every American was willing, or at least enough Americans, not every, that's bullshit, but if enough Americans were willing to just not go to work for a fucking month, what if what was left of the actual engineering class didn't go to work? I know this sounds a lot like Atlas Shrugged, but it is and it isn't. Because the greatest power you have is to choose not to participate. I wish you'd realize this. You know, if enough of us just chose non-participation, this system would grind to a fucking halt. You think it depends upon guns, and you're right, but it also depends upon the people that run the logistics for the guns. It also depends upon the people that design the guns. It also depends upon the people that train the people that use the guns. Ultimately, the system depends upon people with guns. It also depends upon a lot of people you'll never fucking see. And if all the engineers and all the people that make the system work just fucking didn't show up for a month, the system would grind to a halt. There is no AI to take over. Oh, but AI will take over. No, it won't. Oh, but what about H-1B? They'll just bring in a bunch of... No, they did that. That did not turn out so great. And my guess is that's one of the reasons why Boeing's having problems. Yeah, the problems with their fucking, you know, airplanes, that's not random, folks. I would bet you dollars of donuts that there's an H-1B visa necessary science technology worker connected to those plane crashes. I would bet you dollars to donuts that that's the case. So yeah, folks, if the actual qualified engineers that are left alive in America chose not to go to work for a fucking month, well, number one, a whole bunch of reactors would cook off, so we'd have to at least have the boiling water reactor people go to work. But the point is, if everybody but them didn't go to work for a month, the system would grind to a halt. In point of fact, even the reactors would be put at risk because, like I said, it isn't just about the reactor. It's about all the shit it needs to not, you know, blow up, which includes having a backup generator, which includes, you know, having access to diesel fuel for the fucking generator so you can pump the water so the fucking control rods don't fucking melt. So actually, the more I think about this, the more I have convinced myself that this is how fucking fragile the system is. And if you're wondering how a fucking middle-aged, burned-out computer programmer can keep getting jobs in Seattle, like at Willy Wonka's, it's not that fucking complicated. That is how bad it is. Despite all the bullshit propaganda about H-1B visa and degenderification and intersectional racial software engineering, the system is broken. And they don't want to be honest about it, so you hire a bunch of fucking janitors to clean it up. You know, you don't want to fix it, so you hire people to paint it over. I can swear and I can yell. I can literally send out email streams about major local airlines, and I still get hired. So please, folks, wake the fuck up. The greatest vote you have is non-participation, but what if the truth is the system is so fragile now that if certain people just decided not to go to work, everything would start to fall apart? And I don't mean one or two people, but yeah. Anyways, I think I should almost switch topics because even I'm beginning to get scared of this idea of people just, you know, qualified people. There are a lot of dirtbags. If they didn't show up to work, the world would actually improve. But yeah. Next topic. Normality is the most addictive drug. Yeah. I would say that that is true. You know, there are a lot of people in my family, including myself, who suffer from addiction issues. And I don't want to go into that. It's not about blaming something. It's about taking responsibility. Ultimately, if I ever drink too much, it's really my fucking problem. And I will say that despite that, you know, the silver lining is that in my case, marijuana has helped with addiction. It isn't to say that I don't, you know, abuse marijuana sometimes. I do. But if there were a drug that you were ever going to abuse, marijuana is about the safest one I can imagine, based on my experience with it. It simply is not in the same category as, let's say, the abuse of heroin or the abuse of, you know, synthetic opioids that you get from your doctor or the abuse of cocaine or meth. It just doesn't compare. But actually, one of the most dangerous drugs is normality. You know, and again, I don't want to keep talking about Willy Wonka's, but Willy Wonka's is a good example. You go on that campus every day and it's like a magical wonderland of bullshit. Every building's got two or three fucking cafeterias filled with these wonderful fucking restaurants serving you fucking nutritious food. You go across campus in little shuttle cars. You got these huge fucking, you know, exercise sports fields with young people playing soccer. I'm not sure if any fucking work gets done at Willy's by permanent employees, but there sure as shit is a lot of fun happening. So yeah, normality. And you know, folks, I don't blame people for it, because in my own heart, the little bit of normality that still exists. I mean, again, I'm talking about normality while I'm podcasting from a tiny cubicle apartment and currently stressed out about not being able to work at 3:30 in the morning. Because I left my phone at work and we use two-factor authentication, and I don't want to explain more than that, but if you have a background, you'll understand what the fuck I mean. Anywho, normality. What is normal? What is comfortable? What makes us feel good? It seems trivial, but actually it's not. At this point in human history, it might be a big thing. It might be a huge thing. I have a podcast from a number of years ago, I think from 2016. And one of the things I said in it is that normal is priceless. Like, quite literally, the days that we have now, where we can go to a restaurant and order some food and it isn't totally poisonous. The days we have now where we can visit some nature and that nature is still kind of intact. I mean, there aren't that many ecosystems left in the world that aren't crashing. But if you have the luck to go to one, that can be amazing. That's a little chunk of normal. Normal can be basically being able to provide for your family without stressing out about it. You know, being able to make sure there's food on the table. But believing that all those things are guaranteed is the drug. The drug is the belief that it's going to be like that forever and it's just going to keep getting better. When in reality, if you really looked around, especially at, you know, your friends and neighbors, and I have more than a few who are getting the cancer and the dementia and the autism with their kids. Yeah, if you actually fucking look around, you'll realize that not only are things not getting better, they're getting fucking worse. Normality is a drug. Normality is an illusion. If you think things are normal right now, I think you need to wake the fuck up. Anyways, I'm gonna switch topics again. I got really angry that first topic, talking about Willy's. Yeah, so anyways. Next topic. Yeah, I don't want to do this one. There's a gender issue one. I don't want to do it. Fuck it. No, I don't want to talk about this. I got a lot of these topics, and I feel like if I talk about them, they're too depressing. Oh, boy. Yeah, I honestly don't know. I feel like this is good. I'm cleaning out topics, but fuck. Bus driver tried to kill me. I already talked about that. Oh, this is a good one. So every once in a while, oh, actually, I think I already talked about this one too. Fuck. Oh guys, it's too early in the morning, and I'm dropping pens. Fuck. All of this stuff, I don't know if I've talked about all of this, I think, and if I haven't, I will again. It's fine. It's bullshit. Oh, no. Ugh. And I know you're on the other end of this wondering, what the fuck, Dan? And what I'm telling you? Okay, here's one I can just. I'll close out with this. I'll close out with this one. I mean, I've been talking for a while now, and it's early in the morning. It's early in the morning, folks. Yeah. It's early. Almost 4 a.m., and I'll be heading to work soon because I left my phone at work. So I'm really not able to work from home right now because of two-factor authentication. It's all I'll say. When I'm riding the bus to Willie's, when I'm riding that bus, you know, taking that ride on the bus, sometimes I'll see different kinds of signs. When I take the bus to Willie's, I'll see signs. I'll see signs on windows. I'll see billboards. Yeah, so when I ride the bus, I see signs. Like, for example, I was riding the bus a few weeks ago, maybe a month ago, and I saw this sign on a window for KeyBank about the red key opening your door to credit, and it seemed a little bit satanic. I've talked about the Beecher's Cheese poster that has the giant pyramid cheese man with the one all-seeing eye and the horns of the bull. Yeah. Basically, a big, giant, walking, false idol devil thing purportedly promoting a cheese festival. We've talked about that. But when I was on the bus the other day, I saw this billboard for Modelo beer. I think Modelo beer is brewed in Mexico. And the quote for this beer was, "Brewed for those with a fighting spirit." Yeah. Brewed for those with a fighting spirit. And the thing, I don't know, it's funny because I was thinking about like all the messages we get and the degree to which it's all orchestrated. Like we get these messages and they do often seem very much controlled, very much designed to manipulate, to gaslight. And it just makes you wonder, like what is the message here? Do they want a bunch of people to get a bunch of Modelo, get really drunk and get into a fight? I'm gonna go get a six, no, I'm gonna get a, no, 24 pack of Modelo beer. I'm gonna take that Modelo beer, get it, and drink it up. I will take that Modelo beer and drink it, and I'll go get into a fucking fight with some Gumbus Lord. Yeah, so. It's weird. Modelo beer brewed for those with a fighting spirit. Fuck. I don't know what to tell you about that. Maybe that isn't the last topic. But I am cleaning up topics here. Like a month's worth. This is crazy. Next topic. This is a funny one. So I have got a friend online who I won't mention. He lives someplace in the desert lands of the regions beyond the Great Mountain Range or near it or somewhere by it. And he's a cool dude and he happens to work for the Popo, which means technically he's on the other side of the border with respect to politics. You know, I'm an anarchist. But he's a nice guy, he's a cool dude, and he's been losing weight and he's been telling me about his progress. But one of the things that I think about is at this point in human history, and again, this is one of those betting problem game theory scenarios, but you need to think about this from a game theory perspective. At this point in human history, if you were about 50 pounds overweight, and that's about where I am, I'm about 40 or 50 pounds overweight. Why would you lose that weight? I mean, why would you do it? Why would you stress out about it? Like, I stress out about gaining weight. I don't want to gain more. But if you ask me at this point, do I worry about getting down to 190 pounds? No. I really, really don't, okay? It's true. When I weighed 190 20 years ago, I could run 2 miles in 11 minutes. Wow, that was great. But the reality is I'm almost 50 years old, and that shit doesn't matter to me any longer. But what I also know is that if food gets scarce, and I think it may end up getting scarce for a while, and that's really the best case scenario, yeah, having a few extra pounds ain't the worst thing in the world. Having a few extra pounds, a few bottles of vitamins on hand, and access to fresh water is not the worst thing in the world. You know, I think a lot of people in the United States of America are going to be losing a lot of weight over the next few years, and it will not be because they're so disciplined in their diet. It'll be for the simple, rational, logical fact that food, which we considered in economic terms an inferior good, you know, essentially something that anybody has access to, and this is, again, economic terminology, food will become not quite a luxury, but it will be remembered once again as a necessity that costs money, that is not cheap, that is not free. Those days are coming. I think that there is at least, I would say, a 60 to 70% chance that before Christmas, food prices will double in this country. Now, they'll try to hide it. They will try to hide it. But I think food prices are going to double before the year end. And they might even, and I think that also might be optimistic. So if you're out there listening to me right now, and I don't mean, let's filter this. My friend who's losing weight, I think what he's doing is good. I think that's great. If you're losing weight because you're trying to improve your health, I think that's great. But if you're currently a little overweight and like me, not particularly sick in any sense, except for sometimes you get sick of it, which means you get those mental health days. But if you're like me and you're kind of overweight, but you're not really physically sick or injured or unable to live, then I would not stress out about losing those pounds right now. Like, I wouldn't, don't gain any more weight, because that ain't going to help you. But I really wouldn't worry about losing those 20 or 30 or 40 pounds. Because, folks, this last winter, when I went through my brief experience with food scarcity, because I didn't have money to buy the food and I was too proud to seek help, I lost a lot of weight. And also, you know, I found out that if you just reduce your calories to a certain level and you're willing to at least walk 3 miles a day, there's really no limit to how much weight you can lose. It hurts because you're going to be really hungry all the time. But frankly, that's also something people should get used to, being hungry. What do Americans, most Americans, know about hunger? I've been able to go without very much food for a few days, even a week without very much food. I mean, just bits and pieces. Not because I plan to, but like I said, you know, because of how do they phrase it these days? Food insecurity. Because of food insecurity, which is really just a euphemism for hunger. So I guess what I'm saying is this. If you want to lose weight because you want to improve your life, because you want to go dating, because you have back issues or health issues, you should do it, okay? Go do it. But if you have no health issues right now and you're 20 to 30 pounds overweight, I would probably just wait about 6 months before you went on that diet. Wait about six, because it's possible in 6 months you're going to get a lot of help from reality. That's what I think. And that's a best case scenario, folks, in Little Saigon. Next topic. I'm really cleaning up topics here. This is good. Going through my notebook and cleaning up topics. Where are the cryptids? This is a good one. And maybe this will be the one I ended on. Maybe I won't. So a cryptid is a creature studied by cryptozoologists that is hypothesized to exist, but has not been proven to exist. Okay, so for example, Bigfoot is a cryptid. Nobody knows if there is a Bigfoot. I mean, folks, I grew up in the Pacific Northwest. My dad was a logger his entire life in the Pacific Northwest. I love my dad, and I forgive my dad for a lot of the things he was or did. None of us are perfect. But I gotta tell you, if there were a Bigfoot, my dad would have killed him. I mean it. Okay? My dad would have driven a skidder over him. He would have, you know, fell a tree on him. He would have used his chainsaw or an axe or a fucking, just whatever he had. But the point is, in all his years, he never saw Bigfoot. So maybe there's a Bigfoot, maybe there's not. Maybe Bigfoot is so fucking shy and so scared of people in the woods that you'll never find him. But what I'm trying to tell you is a cryptid is something like Bigfoot or Loch Ness Monster or the Thunderbird. You know, the Thunderbird, the giant eagle or hawk that supposedly abducts children every year. You know, there's that too. But I was thinking about this whole cryptid thing, and it occurred to me, like, what if all of these purported creatures do exist? What if they do exist? What if there is a Bigfoot, a Loch Ness Monster, a Thunderbird? What if Ogopogodogo really does exist? What if there are creatures that live in the Gumba swamps, amongst the swirly folk, deep in the woods beyond the river Goom? What if there are giant snakes that live in the deep caverns of the sea? What if there are giant worms that live inside of your colon? What if there is a hawk that flies in the sky, a beautiful hawk that is, I don't know, 50 feet long and has a wingspan of 100 feet? What if this giant thunderbird will fly down periodically and abduct children and, I don't know, cattle and probably French bulldogs like Beans, that fuck? Many a day I've sat out in my sister's yard with Beans and imagined a giant hawk swooping down and picking up Beans and carrying that little French bulldog away. Goodbye, Beans. Yeah. What if these cryptids are hiding out and just waiting for humans to so fuck themselves? That's when they show up. Like, I was talking to some people at Willy's the other day, and Willy's is beyond the Great Sea on the eastern side, and Willy's is next to some forests that haven't been totally fried by UV summer yet. But yeah, purportedly because of all the gumbas they drop, you know, they put into the skies. Yeah, I was talking to some people at Willy's, and I said, you know, one of these days we're going to be looking out the window at Willy's, and we're going to see all of these 12-foot-tall furry creatures coming out of the woods, and it's like, that'll be the day we know it's it. That's it. That's day zero. What if Bigfoot and the Thunderbird and the Ogopogos and the Loch Ness Monsters and the Yeti and all of these cryptozoological, hypothesized, mythological, trans quadriflogical creatures come rushing out of nature all at once when they know that our time is near the end? Yeah, so that could happen. But that's enough of that topic. You know, towards the end, the cryptids come for us. You never know. It could happen, right? Last topic. I've talked about this one, but I feel like this is a good one to end it on. And I've made good progress here. Am I? I don't know. I'm almost. Yeah. I'm really cleaning up topics here. So I've talked about going to the crawl space before, and here's what, and I'll talk about it again. When I was growing up, we lived on Highway 20. Highway 20 in Washington State back in the 70s, and it still is, I think, today, but back in the 70s was basically a two-lane highway, 50-mile-an-hour speed limit or whatever. Although back in the 70s in Skagit County in Washington State, I think a lot of people just went whatever speed they could on Highway 20. Well, we lived right on it, and we had a bunch of dogs. And I'm not happy about what I'm about to tell you, but the reason why we had a bunch of dogs, not all at the same time, is because these dogs would periodically chase cars. And here's the deal: if a dog chases a car, he always runs the risk that some car behind him is going to hit him. And so we had a lot of dogs that got hit by cars. It was really sad. And they were all German Shepherds. It's a very depressing topic in that sense. However, sometimes the dogs would get hit and they wouldn't die immediately. But what they would do is they would go underneath the house and just wait. And I remember, I think I was in first or second grade talking to a friend of mine about this, and he said, "Yeah, they just know. These animals just know when they're going to die, and they just want to go someplace and be alone." So I've been thinking about all these weird, every once in a while you'll read some online newspaper article about some dignitary going to Antarctica. You'll read about Al Gore or, some senator, some jackass going to Antarctica, some star, maybe Leonardo DiCaprio. They go to Antarctica for reasons we don't yet understand. Some people think it's because the giant pyramids are being revealed as the ice melts. Some people think it's because they're building cave complexes in Antarctica. They know that day zero is near. Yeah, so what if the final readout, the final holdout, the final safe space, the final bunker for the scumbags that run the world is currently being constructed and finalized in Antarctica? And so basically the plan is when the alarm goes off, and let's call it the world alarm, all of the rich scumbags head to Antarctica and the rest of us basically die. But when you think about it, going to Antarctica in that scenario is a lot like the dog going underneath the house, going to the crawl space. I'm not saying they can't make it work. I'm not saying they can't survive. Rich scumbags throughout history have found all sorts of ways to survive. It is what it is. I'm not going to tell you that the game theory approach of sociopathy doesn't work biologically. It kind of does. It's also why Darwin isn't enough. If you're running your life based upon evolutionary theory or natural selection, I don't want to hang out with you, buddy, because your worldview is basically at any time I could end up getting shivved, you fuck. Anyways, the reason why they're going to Antarctica is because they're going to the crawl space. I don't know. I feel like this is enough topics for now. I'm going to revisit the beginning for the ending, and I'm going to say this. Life is hard for a lot of people these days. Life is way worse for most people on planet Earth compared to me. I live better than most of the people on planet Earth. I live way better. I have access to water, which is mostly kind of clean, except for the fucking fluoride. I have access to food that is still kind of nutritious, except for the fact of how it's grown and all the glyphosate. And that applies to organic too, because folks, unless you're doing a lot of fucking research, you really can't be sure what you're eating when it comes to organic. That's a whole nother topic. But yeah, as an American, as a contracting worker slave for Willy Wonka's, life is good for me, you know? And right now, and my current theory is that things are that bad, but right now, even the Deadeyo, they don't know where I am. They're so busy, they haven't figured out how to fucking tax me yet. And it's been a while. It's been more than a year. It's been a couple years. So basically, right now for me personally, I have plenty of cash. My health is okay. Yeah, I don't love my job, but it is what it is. So before I go off and start complaining, you need to understand that no matter how shitty it gets for most Americans, at least up until this point in 2019, most people in America, even on a shitty day, are doing better than most of the people on planet Earth. That's what I'd like you to remember. Yeah, I don't like Willy's, okay? I don't like working there. It's a really crony, crooked company. Wake the fuck up. That's pretty much most of America now. You want to tell me about your startup, about your venture capital money for adding some new app to the fucking NSA dog collar phone? Fuck you, deep state schmuck. The ultimate reality is there is no free enterprise in this sideways, upside down police state of everybody mutually experiencing the buggery of each other's freedom. We live in a crony, crooked economy. And if you have a soul, if you have eyes to see and ears to hear, you probably feel a lot of pain sometimes because you know it could be better. We could live in a free society. We could live in a free world of brave people. When I was a kid, I was told about this mythological place, this impossible to believe place called the United States of America. And supposedly in this place, there were people who would say the following, that this is the land of the free and the home of the brave. I was told about this place when I was a kid. It was like it was in a dream or a misty dream. I don't even remember. Did I live in this place? Did it ever exist? As an anarchist, I can tell you a lot of it was probably bullshit to begin with. If you don't believe me, ask the Native Americans, the ones that, aren't too drunk at the casino, right? This society, specifically this government created by the Constitution was crooked from the beginning. So crooked that we created a government to punish farmers for basically converting grain that would go rotten into whiskey. Have you ever heard of the Whiskey Rebellion? You see, folks, we don't talk about those 3 or 4 or 5 years between the end of the Revolutionary War and the Constitution. We don't talk about it. It's a dirty little fucking secret. We gave actual freedom in this country 5 fucking years. We gave actual freedom in the United States of America 5 goddamn years, and then we gave up on it. When Benjamin Franklin told that woman, she said, "Well, what kind of a government do we have now?" And he says, "A republic, if you can keep it." He was being fucking ironic. If he had a soul, if he was as smart as people say he was, and he had a soul, he already knew the fucking truth. The very moment the Constitution was created, whatever free republic existed was dead. Oh, sure, the crocodile of the 19th century spent most of its time eating Native American babies and killing people who are Mexican and basically making the lives of women and African Americans and other people a living hell. But in 1913, the crocodile turned on everybody. So we all got a taste of getting stuff shoved up our assholes. We all got fucked. So yeah, I do complain about working in this crooked crony economy, but what am I gonna do? Every fucking job is a crocodile job now. It's like the conversation I have with my nephew. You know, he went he He is now at boot camp. He's doing really well. For those of you who want to know, he is in the Navy. He's going to go in the nuke program. He's a good guy. And I told him, listen, I don't agree with what you're doing, but it's your fucking life. It's your life, not mine. And I also added the simple fact that there's no place of judgment. Not simply because only God gets to judge, but more importantly, because every fucking job is a crocodile job. It isn't just the guys carrying the guns. It's the people making sure the food shows up so the guys carrying the guns can keep eating. Wake the fuck up. Anywho, I gotta go to work because the intersectional dynamics of a G-genderfied software engineering fart party of purple-haired freaks basically goes sideways every 15 seconds. And I'm told to basically be okay with it because I'm the janitor of code. But I'll tell you, sometimes I get really tired of this bullshit. And have a great fucking day.